I would call to order this meeting of the House Rules Committee. Welcome, everybody. We have a full house. And in fact, so we don't get in violation with the fire marshal, there is an overflow room in the hearing room B, which is on the first floor. You'll be able to hear. So especially if you haven't signed up to testify and you're game for going up to hearing room B, several folks have signed up to testify, so we want you to stay if you're testifying. But it'll be piped in so you can see and hear everything and not be crowded in. Actually, hearing room B is a better room than this room. I would rather be there if I could go. It is Wednesday, March 30th, and we're going, just so you have a sense of order, we have a bunch of bills on our agenda. We're going to take, we're going to begin with House Bill 3452, and I would open a public hearing on House Bill 3452. We're going to have, and I will say that the sign-ups we've got, I have a bunch of people who signed up to testify in favor, and a bunch of people who haven't checked either in favor. Okay. I have nobody who signed up to testify in opposition. So, that was not an applause line. I was just, if you plan to testify in opposition, we try to balance things back and forth between panels. So if you could let Amy, our committee assistant over there, know if you do plan to testify in opposition, because the sign-up sheets we've got don't designate anyone signed up in opposition. So, again, if you are standing, if you could grab a seat or head up to hearing room B, the state police and the fire marshal don't want anyone standing in the room. But we are in the hearing. I invite first to begin Representative Phil Barnhart and Mike Salvaggio from the Treasurer's Office, and invite Mr. Sembridge to give us a summary of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, this bill has a -3 amendment, which I will speak to. The -3 amendment has been distributed here and is available on the Internet. It replaces the measure. It establishes a 3-member Oregon Economic Development Finance Authority to invest and manage state funds to create jobs, provide economic opportunity, and otherwise support economic development in Oregon. It specifies membership of the authority to be the governor or designee, state treasurer or designee, and third member to be chosen by the other two. It directs the authority to increase access to capital for small business and farms, assist in providing stability to the local financial sector, and fund related government operations with a portion of the authority's earnings. It directs the Oregon Business Development Department to provide the staff. It directs the authority to appoint a 7-member advisory council representing the state's financial sector, small businesses, building trades, and small farms. It requires the authority to report to the Legislative Assembly prior to the 2013 session with a summary of monies invested and managed, as well as recommendations for legislation. It also declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Thank you very much, and I may have said we're starting with this bill. We do plan to get to all the other bills. The other bills should be much shorter, so we do plan to get to all the other bills on the agenda today. But Representative Barnhart, all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Rules Committee. My name is Phil Barnhart. I represent House District 11 in Central Lane and Linn Counties. The issue that, and I want to say that I'm going to be speaking entirely to the -3 amendments, which I'm proposing be substituted for the bill. So when I make comments, that's what it's about, not the printed bill itself. We have gone through a number of revisions before we ever got here. I'm not going to say this is the last one, but it's. I think we're getting close. This issue first came to me over a year ago when it was raised by the Working Families Party in Oregon trying to figure out how we could support local banking institutions and local credit unions and local businesses and local farms in the process of economic development and job growth. That's sort of where we started. The problem, as we narrowed the focus and we narrowed it down, we got to talking about the issue of how the state of Oregon promotes economic development. We have a number of funds that are scattered among agencies and boards with the general aim of improving the state's economy through interaction with private business. Other funds that the state maintains have no particular investment aim or focus. Their earnings are designed to go into various places for various purposes, but there's no particular investment aim, and so they can be invested anywhere. We have agencies that are trying to promote economic development and job growth without the right resources or enough resources to do so. We have local financial institutions with the expertise in business development. We have small farms that are unable to grow because programs available do not address their needs. We have small businesses that would like to grow, and as the economy changes and improves, I expect that there will be a great demand for additional financial support of various kinds, both from the private businesses like banks and credit unions, but state funds that are available and focused could actually be quite useful as well. Our solution, House Bill 3452-3, the Oregon Economic Development Finance Authority, made up of the governor, the treasurer, and a third member that they appoint for a two-year term. A very small authority, with an advisory board made up of representatives of Oregon banks, Oregon credit unions, small business, building trades, and small farms. The job of the authority is to pull together under a coordinating umbrella within existing statutory cyborgs, protecting our funds from risks that were not contemplated by the legislature when the funds were set up, coordinating these state funds that are currently scattered and uncoordinated by writing agreements with the current owners of the funds for financial management and investment. It's a very simple idea on the internal side, getting the funds coordinated, pulled together in a way that they can be used. And what this bill does is establish an outline for that. It doesn't establish the specific arrangements because they're complex. They will be different for each fund, and they require a level of financial expertise that I frankly would rather hand to the governor and the treasurer than to try to do it here. But our sideboards require that the rules under which the funds now operate cannot change under this bill. So that whatever protections are in those funds now for their protection and investment will continue. On the external side, this board or this authority would work through existing state agencies, probably mostly Oregon Business, to manage specific investment activity in a coordinated way to promote Oregon economic development, especially small businesses and small farms. For example, some of the funds that might be included in something like this, if their boards and agencies approve, the Oregon Growth Account, which currently is partly committed to a variety of venture capital firms, but at least half of the funds in the account are uncommitted because the ability to actually place them is missing. Oregon investment accounts in PERS that are intended for investment in Oregon could also be managed through the authority. And in the other category, the funds that aren't particularly aimed in any particular place, the escheat funds in the Department of State Lands, the income of which goes to the Common School Fund, so a portion of them could also be invested through this mechanism to help grow Oregon business and Oregon small farms. The authority should begin pulling together the fund management with a starting date for management sometime next year, perhaps the year after. I'm hoping next year. And the portion of this bill requires the authority to recommend to determine what changes in statutes might be needed to accomplish its purpose, and also to report back to the legislature not later than the beginning of the 13th session. I'm hoping the beginning of the 12th session to tell us what additional authority or changes in these fund sideboards it might need. By the time the recovery is well underway, the authority and the agencies handling the external investments must be ready to participate with local financial institutions and coordinate the efficient investment of the people's funds to promote economic development while protecting the funds for availability for their primary purpose. For a state like Oregon, small business will lead the way out of the recession. When small business and family farms are ready to grow, we need to be ready too. And I commend the -3 amendment to House Bill 3452 because I believe it could be an important part of our economic growth strategy.
Thank you. Mike, welcome.
Thank you. Members of the committee, Mr. Co-Chair, for the record, my name is Mike Silvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer.
and the Treasurer regrets that he is unable to be here today. He is traveling out of state on business, but he has asked that I read his statement into record, and I will do so with the committee's approval.
And if you would might indulge and give, and we've got the full statement, if you might give an edited version, that'd be fabulous.
Certainly.
Thanks.
To be brief, the Treasurer believes that the bill is, as Representative Barhart said, a good start to coordinate our state economic development resources together. The Treasurer was tapped by incoming Governor John Kitzhaber to lead a economic development task force during the interim, and in that he discovered that there really is no overarching strategy among economic development efforts from agency to agency. Business Oregon may have their funds that they manage. Treasury has its funds. Other agencies have their funds. The purpose of this is to put this strategic framework over the entire collection of economic development resources that the state has, to identify other potential resources that we could add to that. And I will point out some of his efforts that he wanted me specifically to bullet point out: to improve the existing loan participation and credit enhancement tools, to encourage activity in particular industry sectors and regions that we determine are vital to our economic success, to take on the type of loans that require lenders to keep skin in the game so as to maintain a reasonable risk profile and good diversification, to use our existing tools in terms of direct investments in concert with these other tools so that we're able to fill in the gaps when necessary and when prudent, and also to prioritize our bonding resources so that rather than allowing our bonded dollars to just be dropped into particular projects here and there, we make sure that economic development efforts in a particular sector are complemented by investments in infrastructure that can add to those same sectors. For example, we have a very traded sector economy. If we rely on agriculture, then that particular sector, as an example, is going to live or die on the strength of our transportation infrastructure. So he thinks that it is vital that we make sure that all of these efforts are swimming in the same direction, so to speak. We feel that the plan before you, as amended with the Dash 3 amendments, is the optimal way to create an economic development strategy that lasts, that creates lasting jobs, and that urges the committee to pass it with the Dash 3 amendments.
Thank you. Questions for our witnesses? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You may want to answer this question. I notice in the bill there's a definition of financial institutions. And then the bill goes on to speak about, you know, working with local financial institutions, and wondering if you have a thought about that nuance.
Well, part of the, if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, part of the idea, I think, behind this bill is not only to strengthen other aspects of our local business and economic development, but also to assist in the strengthening of local financial institutions as they support local business development and job growth. I think it's very similar to the comment the Treasurer makes about using bond funds for strategic investment in infrastructure to coordinate with these kinds of investments, because the financial institutions in our state are a very important part of our economic well-being, and supporting the ones that focus on Oregon as a primary area of concern is, I think, a piece of our intent.
Thank you.
Representative Holby, that covers your questions. Representative Burr.
Yeah. I'm a little curious what new authority is in here that isn't currently, for instance, in the treasurer's purview? And the treasurer's not here to ask that, so I'm kind of putting you on the spot on that. But, I mean, what, other than the formation of this two boards and hiring a professional, what's new? What authority is granted by this to this new board and new advisory panel? Because am I right? That's what we've got, a board, an advisory panel, and a hired professional.
Do you want to deal with
this? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, that's an excellent question, and I think the key to the answer is the fragmentation of the economic development funds and other efforts around the state right now. Had they all lived in Business Oregon, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation. We may even be looking at a simple executive order had they all lived in the governor's agencies. But what we have here is an economic development structure right now that is so broadly scattered around state government in Business Oregon, in the Treasury, in terms of the Oregon Investment Fund and the Oregon Growth Account, some funds that use lottery dollars, some funds that reside in the Department of Energy, and some resources that are available only at the behest of the legislature. So the idea here is to provide some kind of authority that has the ability to not only put eyes on all of those, but to issue recommendations and agreements between all of these entities so that we can make sure that they're all responding to the same coordinated effort.
That's a good answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, thank you both very much. Based on the large number of people we have and our commitment to get through everybody, we're going to unfortunately have to limit everyone's testimony to 2 minutes each. So there will be a small time clock here that you will see sitting right in front of Mr. Stembridge that will light up when you're at 2 minutes and make a very soft sound. So please be sensitive to that so we can make sure we give everybody a chance to testify. Let's begin with Malin Vigessa and Dan Steffi. Malin Vigessa and Dan Steffi.
And I'm assuming you're exempt.
Dan is going to go first.
Okay. Great. Welcome to the Rules Committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Wilson, and my name is Dan, and members of the committee. My name is Dan Steffi. I'm Senior Vice President of Development for Guardian Real Estate Services in Portland. We are a 40-year-old company with 350 employees managing 13,000 units of housing in seven states. Largely, we are Portland-based. Most of those units are in the Pacific Northwest, large number in Oregon. In the last 10 years, we have developed 1,700 units of affordable housing throughout our portfolio. Most of those projects here in Oregon, the largest number in places like Clatskanie, Ontario, Winston, Roseburg, Monmouth, McMinnville, Milwaukee, Portland, Gresham. And my message today is to talk about affordable housing as it relates to economic development and the function of this authority, proposed authority. Without affordable housing, without housing that's affordable to the workforce, you don't have a stable economy in any community. And the work that we do is both producing and preserving housing in communities around the state and around the West. That not only brings jobs. Just this week, we're finishing up the last three projects in a nine-project portfolio that collectively will deliver 500 jobs around the state as these projects work through construction. Not only that, but we're preserving federal rental subsidies that come into the state in the millions of dollars, and we are using other federal subsidies like the Federal Low Income Housing Tax Credit to bring equity into the state from major institutional investors to build this affordable housing. We're working on a portfolio of 9 properties. Again, they're Hood River, the Dalles, Roseburg, Lincoln City. They're scattered around the state.
If you could wrap up your testimony, please.
I will. One of those is in the Dalles. It's got the need for a $3.5 million loan that the major banks that we've used historically are now not going to small communities. And so we've talked to people like Malin about the ability for community banks to participate, and that's where this fund would work. My apologies.
Thank you. Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Malin Vigasa, and I'm the president and CEO of Centerpoint Community Bank, headquartered in Hood River. And we also have a branch in the Dalles. We're a fairly new community bank, having been open for just approximately 3 years and have been very successful. Our bank is locally owned, and our full focus is on the well-being and the economic growth of the Columbia Gorge market area. I have over 40 years of banking experience, mostly in large banks. I believe the Oregon Credit and Finance Authority will provide a valuable tool to help community banks finance projects needed in our communities. This would be a win-win for community such as ours, and also for the state. Right now, large out-of-state banks have the vast majority of the Oregon public funds. They also use their branches to gather deposits from our communities, and ultimately, they use these to chase the best returns, which in downturns like we are experiencing today means funding corporate expansions overseas, which creates jobs over there and not here. This proposal is a real good step towards directing Oregon funds to meet the financial needs of small communities and communities of Oregon. There are 3 most important aspects of this, and I'll just briefly cover them. They're in but basically is buying loan participations. Virtual bank would buy loans from the banks that were in excess of their authority. Banks, particularly smaller banks, they have a low limit on how much they can loan out. And a virtual bank.
Could you wrap up your testimony, please?
Okay. The other aspect would be that the Oregon could sell these to other community banks. And the third aspect is consolidating some of those loan guarantee programs into rate reduction programs and so forth that the state has and making them more simple for the community banks and more access for the community banks to use. I think one important aspect of this is that these banking seats on the advisory board should be limited to Oregon community banks that have the benefit from loan participations. Large banks and even regional banks do not need this in this way. The best way to clarify this is to limit the seats to Oregon banks that have at least 75% of their locations here in Oregon. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for our witnesses? Thank you both very much. And I know Senator Thompson had planned to be here, but he called in and said he wasn't able to join us. So.
Yeah, thank you.
I would call forward Jose Gonzalez, Sarah Brown, and Kendra Kimbira Casas, approximately.
Pretty good.
And why don't we pull up a 4-seat, Andrea Malmberg. You can just pull up. Perfect. Please begin. Introduce yourselves for the record, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman, distinguished committee members. My name is Jose Gonzalez, president of Tucasa Real Estate. It's a business here in Salem. We've been here 18 years. I'm entering my 15th year there. In 2005, I was given the opportunity to buy out the majority share, and I've enjoyed the ride ever since. What's neat for me to see is that some of our very first clients have come back, used us for several purchases. Their children have come to us. Makes me feel a little older, you know. But at the same time, what's neat to see is we've also helped them in their first open up, helping them with their businesses. Some of these first people have done very, very well, and now they own several businesses, and we're expanding our services to the commercial area. And that led me to have a whole new group, a whole team around me, basically, you know, attorneys, CPAs, people that deal with businesses, which led us to the formation of the Latino Business Alliance. It's an all-volunteer business-to-business support network, and that led me to my work with the Main Street Alliance of Oregon, and we submitted a report on credit and financing that you'll have with you. And over the last 15 years, I can tell you I've dealt with every bank. I understand why they're having difficulty lending. I understand the underwriting process, and I'm very familiar with it after working hand-in-hand with these clients, with all these clients over the last few years. And one of the big problems is the way the banks, they value assets. 30% of, especially new business owners, they use their home equity. We know that that's going to be an issue currently. Currently, we're trying to layer loans, grants, urban renewal money. It's very difficult to get some of these businesses the financing they need. And more than anything, these small business owners are frustrated. They don't have the time to go to every single bank and try to figure out how to do it. They have to go back and run their business. One example is a construction company here in town. They had a contract to do some school remodeling. Long story short, the bank only allowed them a six-month term. By the time they got paid off, it was 8 months. For 2 months, they had to carry $700,000 of materials and labor costs. And they told me they're just not going to pursue this kind of projects anymore, and that's very hard to see on my end of things. And so for us, we need to change. We need to be more creative. In my opinion, a state bank is a great option. I think it'd be a great partner for not only the small businesses, but also the banking community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Right on 2 minutes. Okay. Well played.
Chair Hunt and Chair Olson and members of the committee, my name is Kendra Kimbaraskis. I'm here today wearing two hats. First off, I am a small family farmer. My husband and I have a small farm in Colton, Oregon, which is in Clackamas County. We raise laying hens and meat birds and veggies that we sell at the market. We also have hogs and a variety of other critters on our property. I'm here mainly to tell you that small farmers need access to credit, that we're finding across the state that farmers, even though they're qualified, are not able to access financing. The second hat that I wear is that I'm president of Friends of Family Farmers. We are the state's largest family advocacy organization for family-scale agriculture in the state. Our constituency are those farmers that you might see at the farmer's market, or if you're a member of a community-supported agriculture buying club, you probably are interacting with one of our members. These are farm direct marketers, and they, too, are having challenges accessing credit. These are qualified individuals with business plans. They're not fringe. If they're in any sort of other business than agriculture, they would be able to access credit, but because they're in agriculture, they're having a hard time getting a farm loan from the bank. You're going to hear two stories, Andrea Malmberg and Sarah Brown. I'm going to let them get into their personal stories and tell you the challenges that they've been facing. But one thing that I think is really important to note is that we are facing a crisis in Oregon. The average age of Oregon's farming population is 58 years of age. And in order for us to keep farming viable, we need to have farmers on the land. And so there's a whole generation of new and beginning farmers that are trying to get into agriculture. These are not your traditional farm kids. Most of these people are not coming from farm families, so they're not going to have the capital in land. They're not going to have the farm equipment that a traditional farmer might have, because they have generations of investments from their families that they can then carry on to their own farm business. These are new people that are coming to agriculture with a passion for farming, and in order to get these folks on the land, we need to find a solution and get them some access to capital. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Which of you is going to go first? All right.
Good afternoon, Chairs Hutton Olson and members of the committee. My name is Andrea Malmberg, and I actually am from a pretty traditional ranching family. I'm from Union County, Oregon. We have had to innovate, and through our innovation have become profitable. I'm also a member of Oregon Rural Action and the chair of the Oregon Grows Partnership, an alliance of Oregon farm, rural development, local food, and food security organizations, representing about 250,000 Oregonians. I'm here today to speak in support of the creation of an Oregon State Bank. I know firsthand that this is needed desperately. Recently, my husband and I attempted to refinance as we thought that our assets, good credit, profitable agriculture enterprises, and predictable consulting and contracting income, we would be able to benefit from today's lower interest rates. We want to expand our business and create more wealth in our community. We spent several hundred dollars for an appraisal and on the underwriter's need for consultations with our attorney and accountants as they couldn't quite wrap their head around their business, our business. That's a quote. We are cattle ranchers. After a good hour of signing a stack of papers, and we utilized a local community bank, we were notified several days later at the 11th hour that we failed to qualify because we didn't have salaried jobs. Let me reiterate, we did not get a job-creating loan because we didn't have jobs. This denial of credit had nothing to do with sound financial policy, but instead is a clear sign that we have been caught up in a broken global financial system. We need lending institutions that understand the diverse nature of Oregon agriculture and the financial needs as well as the contributions that we provide to the state. An Oregon State Bank that has Oregon's people's interests at its core will be a step in the right direction in building a vibrant state economy amidst the global financial system that is truly broken. Thank you.
Thank you very much. She's got a mic right in front of her.
Sorry. Co-chair Hunt and Olson and members of the committee, my name's Sarah Brown. I'm one of the new and beginning farmers that Kendra was mentioning. My husband and I have been farming in Clackamas County for the past 4 years. And I have a degree in agriculture from UC Davis. We've farmed and managed multiple farms before owning our own business. We've filed Schedule Fs with our taxes. We can show that we've had an increase in income and assets over the past 4 years. And we've still been denied loans. When we go to banks, we've been approved and qualified to buy houses of up to $350,000. We have excellent credit scores, and then as soon as we mention farming, they have nothing to offer us. And my peers, many of whom sell at the farmers market and direct to consumers through CSAs, are definitely experiencing a very similar issue. There are a few very limited number of options in Oregon if you want farm financing, and unfortunately they don't work for us. They're geared more towards large-scale commodity growers, and they don't have experience working with smaller, diversified vegetable or specialty crop growers. And as Kendra mentioned, there's a growing number of folks that are interested and definitely needed, and so I think that this is a very viable option. Thank you. Thank you for hearing our testimony.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you all very much for your testimony, especially for coming all the way from Union County.
You know, Mr. Chair, listening to that alarm clock go off, first time I heard it, I thought maybe I was out in the barn right at that moment. I don't know if you get a chance to listen to it back there, but it's interesting.
I would invite forward Linda Navarro, Jim Clark, and Anne-Marie Mellum. And on deck after them, we'll have Christine Chin-Ryan, Jared Gardner, and Barbara Dudley.
Welcome to the Rules Committee.
You can kick off whichever of the three of you want to proceed first. Okay.
Linda's going to start us off.
One page.
Navarro's up first. Okay. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Navarro. I'm president and CEO of the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Community Banks of Oregon. We represent Oregon's banking industry. Both large banks and small banks, our memberships comprise of 50 banks that have branches in the state of Oregon, employ people in the state of Oregon, are insured and regulated. And 31 of those are actually headquartered in Oregon, and a number of others are community banks that are headquartered in, say, Washington, or even in Idaho. So I'm here today with the chairs, actually, of both the Oregon Bankers Association and the Independent Community Banks of Oregon, and given the time constraints, there's absolutely no way I can really go into all the details of this very complex concept in 2 minutes, so I'll defer to them to add a little more detail, but I do want to add that most recently we have been working and talking with Representative Barnhart and with the Treasury about the Dash 3 amendments that Representative Barnhart spoke to, and we're increasingly comfortable with those amendments over the original legislation because we believe it actually is addressing an identifiable problem with an identifiable solution. A lot of the problems we're hearing today and a lot of discussion that's happened many, many times throughout Oregon's history on this idea of a state bank, it boils down to the fact that the state bank idea in North Dakota, which is the only one that exists in the country, is really around partnering with banks through, you know, like loan guarantee programs and loan participations. And most states, like Oregon, since 1919, when they started the State Bank of North Dakota, have had economic development departments evolve to do a lot of those things. So one of the handouts I gave you was a list of the current lending programs, that most of which are in partnership with local banks, that Business Oregon runs now. And so we think the credit side of this equation, as far as maybe enhancing those programs if we want to address farms or loan participations or whatever else we've heard about, you know, there's an agency to do that, and that agency reports to an Economic Development Commission, and it actually also has, a lot of people don't know, a loan advisory committee on which three community bankers currently serve. And the whole goal around that is to look at, you know, public-private partnerships on making loans available. So we think that side's met. The compelling side, and the reason we like the Dash 3s much better, is that that really gets
could wrap up, Linda,
at
thanks.
The investment side of the equation, which I think Mike Salvaggio did a good job explaining to you. And, you know, if they need that tool, then we could, if it was focused on that investment side and not on the credit side, I think that maybe the redundancy would be far less in that case. So with that, I'll conclude and answer questions later if you have any.
Great. Jim or Anne-Marie?
I'm Anne-Marie Malam, and I am the chair of the Oregon Bankers Association Board of Directors this year, and it is made on our board are 18 bankers. Most of them are community banks on the board, or the majority, I would say. I'm also president and CEO of Summit Bank in Eugene, Oregon, and we are clearly a smaller community bank. I mean, we have 26 employees and about $125 million in assets. And we're there to make business loans to small businesses. That's our whole thing. I won't add too much because I think Linda said it succinctly for us. We have been working with everybody on the amendments, and we're very much closer to something that I think we think will be workable, and that's the whole goal here, is to get things working for our you know, our customers and our communities. And I think we're getting very close to something. I got this bill last night that with the amendments, it's just been hashed around, and I think we're really getting close. So I don't have anything else to add right now.
Okay. Thanks. Jim.
Gotta wait for the good.
You're fine.
Clock,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jim Clark. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of Oregon Pacific Bank, headquartered out of Florence. We basically serve Western Lane, Douglas, Coos, and Curry counties. We get rural banking. We get specialty crops from cranberries to bulbs to nursery cropping out there. We, too, are a community bank. Small in nature, 66 employees, makes us one of those small businesses that we're trying to encourage to grow in the state. Today I'm here to speak to you as the director or chair of the Independent Community Bankers of Oregon. So truly those banks that are headquartered in the state of Oregon, even a smaller subset than the Oregon Bankers Association represents. When we read through the bill, we look at it and say that there's are aspects of it that we look at, we can use, we can develop ideas from. The could we do it more efficiently? And that's me speaking as a taxpayer. I would encourage the committee to look for those. But when it comes to lending dollars, that's what we do. We profit by it. It's collecting the internal deposits of our communities and relending them back out into the communities. It's working to try and gain deposit dollars from government entities when possible. The State Treasurer's Department and the 18 months ago required that banks hold $1 of securities to pledge for every dollar of government deposits a bank took in.
That's recently been relaxed back down to about 75% for most of us, and that really helps because then we can use the state's dollars to leverage off them and make more loans. Liquidity is not really a challenge for most of the banks in Oregon right now. It's trying to come up with qualified lending opportunities out there. And please trust us, we make every reasonable effort to comply with those while staying within the confines of the regulatory environment that we live with. When it comes to an appraisal, that was taken away from us. Those appraisal guidelines and expectations were set by the government. When it comes to some of the other issues that we have to look to the Federal Reserve Bank, the FDIC, Thrift Supervision, OCC, as they set the guidelines under which we have to deal with. If you left it to Oregon banks, our goal is to support the communities that we're in. We do that by growing them, by growing the businesses that are in there. The amendments that came through with Dash 3 definitely provide a guidance method for the program that's being developed. It's not a direct lending. It's not in competition. We have the resources to provide participations between banks. If a loan gets too large for Anne Marie or my bank, we have the opportunity to call each other, and there's a method by which we can do that. So we would look forward to the bill as proposed and any questions we can help answer for you today.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for these panelists? Thank you all very much.
You like my green sweater? No, that was...
Chair Hunt, I just want to acknowledge that I did put another handout in front of you. I know you're not considering a bill on public deposits, but it's been brought up a couple times today, and it's a pretty complex issue, so I just wrote that paper thinking that it might be useful to you for your reading later.
Okay,
so.
Great. Thank you. Representative Holby?
Thank you. I just wanted to thank Anne Marie Malam because she hosted... many conversations about this. She's almost a year ago, seems like now, and has really been working hard with Representative Barnhart on this issue. So I appreciate her participation. Thank you.
Great. So let's bring forward Christine, Jared, and Barbara. And on deck will be Linda Bergen, Ron Williams, and Hank Keaton. Should be Christine Chin Ryan, Jared Gardner, and Barbara Dudley.
That's the deck back there.
Christine, welcome.
Thank you. Co-Chairs Hunt and Olson and members of the committee, for the record, I am Christine Chin Ryan, founder and president of Synergy Consulting, Inc. Synergy Consulting, Inc. is a small business technology firm providing customized software development for 23 years. I also serve as chair of the Oregon Small Business for Responsible Leadership and served as chair of the Governor's Small Business Council. I'm going to skip the statistics I found, fresh new statistics on small business. I would like to share a story of a small business owner in my hometown of Sandy. Mark Fritch, owner of Mark Fritch Log Homes, has been in business for 28 years. He is currently trying to secure funding to purchase a new work site. The new owner is offering... After 21 years at the time at the same location, he learned that the owner had sold the property. The new owner is offering half the space that Mark had prior to sale at double the rent. He can't realistically work in that small space and at double the rent. He is looking to buy a piece of property and will need to come up with $50,000 for a down payment. He has been confirmed by Clackamas County Economic Development as eligible to receive $50,000 in matching funds if he can find a small local bank that will give him the loan. Things are in process, but are currently moving at a glacial pace. House Bill 3452-3 addresses Oregon small businesses as the primary beneficiaries of this bill and merges the economic development functions of existing agency into a single administrative function. The original efforts to create an Oregon State Bank were to be targeted towards small businesses hit hardest by this economic downturn. Commercial, financial, and banking institutions have severely restricted or completely halted small businesses' loans and credit lines accounts, regardless of previous or current credit worthiness. In light of these facts, I would like to request another amendment to House Bill 3452-3, which would provide an Oregon small business Loan Participation Fund with a fixed amount of $30 million targeted exclusively towards qualified small businesses. Small businesses are defined as in ORS 285B-123-2. This amendment would ensure that small businesses have access to capital without competing with medium and large businesses. The Oregon Small Business Loan Participation Fund will give small businesses the funds needed to continue to spur economic development and job growth to get us out of the recession. And after listening to the small farms, I would like to add small farms in this, too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jared Gardner. I'm with the Coalition Oregonians for State Bank.
Okay, if you can turn the mic just a little bit more toward you. Perfect. Thanks.
I think most of the testimony previous hit the points I wanted to cover, but as Michael Salvaggio from the Treasurer's Office outlined, that this entity is necessary as a separate than what we currently have. The opportunity then to put funds to use for loan participations is where we can bring our money home and put it to use through community banks. It is clear that the large banks, Wall Street banks, have pulled out of Oregon communities. That's clear all the way up through the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke. He testified last week that's absolutely true based on their automated underwriting system. So we really need to support community banks. Now, as Anne-Marie Malin said, the banks have the ability to participate with each other. Practice, though, is that the lead institution take a certain percentage. Often in cases such as Dan, Steffi, and Malin we're talking about, that is that will push that envelope, whereas there might be multiple banks that would like to get in on that deal. If a state bank, or in this case, the Streamlined Economic Development Authority is able to coordinate that saves on time, legal costs, and creates a standardized underwriting procedure that the FDIC would treat more favorably than independent banks making independent decisions and trying to reconcile that. So in the case of a deal where you might need three banks to go in, you have an entity that can facilitate that and make sure that community banks can do that as efficiently as possible. So I wanted for the record to clarify that this adds a whole set that other community banks haven't traditionally been able to participate in. And as far as risk, it's absolutely essential that this entity manage risk, which is why we've been arguing pretty hard for bankers to be a strong part of that in relationship with our state regulators. They know best how to manage portfolios. For instance, we have FHA, VA, SBA loans. Those are all government-guaranteed loans that are being made in this state that are instantly sold out of our state. This entity with this new authority would be able to purchase those and keep that interest money, that low-risk, extremely low-risk loans in our state. That's currently not available. So with that, I'd like to just say that this is an entity that would help manage the health and growth of especially our smallest community banks. We would like to, for the Dash 3 amendments, clarify that it would be best if the advisory board includes community bankers defined either by institutions owned locally, which there are 26 of those in the state, so there's plenty to choose from, or by those that have a majority of their branches in Oregon. It makes sense that they would be driving the creation and function of this. Please take that into consideration.
Okay. Thank you. Barbara.
Thank you, Chair Hunt and Co-Chair Olson and members of the committee. My name for the record is Barbara Dudley. I am co-chair of the Oregon Working Families Party. And I'm pleased to hear what I believe is some consensus being reached on amendments to this legislation that we can all live with. I want to remind us about the very serious situation we're attempting to address, however, lest we get lost in the weeds here. 2 years ago, we experienced an extremely serious recession caused by a meltdown on Wall Street that was brought about by some very risky lending behavior and some very exotic financial instruments. The taxpayers bailed out those financial institutions to the tune of $700 billion, and they're now doing very nicely, thank you. In the meanwhile, however, the rest of us, particularly here in Oregon, have had to get very used to a term that I find appalling, which is a jobless recovery. There are over 10% of the people in this state still out of work. Still out of work 2 years later, and for them it is a desperate situation. So that this is not something to be taken lightly. Credit has dried up on Main Street. Community banks are lending, yes, but not lending at the pace at which they should be lending. not able to lend, as Malin and Dan were talking about, in some situations, which could provide jobs and homes for working people. And the other thing that we need to remember is that this Bank of North Dakota that was the original model for the, what we were proposing in the initial stages of this has been successful for over 90 years now, politically and financially successful, and North Dakota has not had a recession. That's not entirely due to the state bank. No one would claim that, but the community banking sector in North Dakota is extremely healthy. There are 90 thriving community banks. So I don't want to take the idea of a state bank off the table. I will support these Dash 3 amendments because I think it is a door that opens the way for a further conversation. But I think that conversation has to happen, and I hope that you all have the foresight to engage in it.
Thank you all. Any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply wanted to note for those who are here that I left because I had to go testify on another bill, and I am now back and paying full attention to the testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you all for being here. So we've got Linda, Ron, and Hank, and then on deck after them, Peter Burgell, Bobby Schultz, and Saba Ahmed. Welcome to the Rules Committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Chairs Hunt and Olson and the members of the Rules Committee. I'm Linda Bergen, president of SEIU 503, Oregon Public Employees Union. We represent over 45,000 members who provide critical public services. The economic crisis has taken a heavy toll on Oregon. Families have lost jobs, savings, quality of life, and in many cases, even their homes. Across the state, neighborhoods are reeling from unemployment coupled with devastating cuts to vital services like health care, education, and public safety. And lending to small businesses has plummeted. We know that it takes a vital state economy with a stable workforce to fund the services that Oregonians believe in. HB 3452, as amended, would create the framework for a coordinated economic development approach to jump-starting our state's economy. In particular, the work of the authority could direct funds and identify needs of capital for Oregon's small businesses and family farms. Between 2007 and 2010, the number of small business loans in Oregon declined by 54%, or $20 million. This has had a devastating effect on unemployment. Oregon has lost nearly 150,000 jobs in this recession. According to the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, small businesses employ roughly half of all Americans and accounts for about 60% of gross job creation. According to a National Small Business Association report, 56% of small businesses that have problems finding available credit reported to having to lay off employees as a result. We also believe that a future discussion about keeping taxpayer dollars in Oregon would be advisable and valuable. Our state could benefit from recirculating our resources back into our communities and local businesses, capturing the interest generated from revenue, and reinvesting the income into schools, health care, and public safety. And we believe this bill is a great first step. The authority would be an important tool in helping Oregon's economy recover and grow. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you.
Hello. Welcome. Co-Chair Hunt, Co-Chair Olson, and members of the committee. My name is Ron Williams. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Action, and I'm here today to voice our support of House Bill 3452 as amended. Oregon Action is a statewide racial, social, and economic justice advocacy organization that serves primarily low and moderate-income families in Oregon. These are working Oregonians who were the first to feel the crushing impact of the Great Recession, and they will, without question, be the last to recover from it. In these trying economic times, we must do everything possible to lift up struggling Oregonians. We are at a profound crossroad here in Oregon. Our unemployment rate hovers around 10%. Small businesses continue to struggle, and the state revenue shortfall makes this one of the most challenging periods in Oregon's history. Recovery will require bold and innovative action. Establishing a State Bank of Oregon is a bold and innovative and new way of thinking about the state of Oregon's financial resources, and it will have a multiplying positive effect for generating revenue, growing small business, and job creation. When we send our money out of state, we, the citizens of Oregon, lose the opportunity to recirculate our resources back into our communities and local businesses. The interest generated from our money goes to the very same too-big-to-fail banks that plunged us into this recession in the first place. Keeping that money right here in Oregon would allow us a measure of self-sufficiency. For small businesses, there is no way to overstate the severity of the setbacks they have faced in their role as job creators and sustainers. A state bank would help stabilize the state's banking market, keeping those banks liquid and lending to local businesses, which in turn would fuel economic growth. The fact is, in Oregon, an Oregon State Bank would stimulate the state's economy, provide stability for local financial institutions, allow for mission-driven economic lending.
That's actually a coincidental sentence. But your 2 minutes is up, but that was coincidental.
So the last thing I'll mention is that I also wear the hat of the People of Color Health Equity Collaborative, which is a statewide organization of people of color, immigrant, and refugee organizations. And we've also taken this on. We're addressing the social determinants of health that have that lead to disparities in health care for people of color and income, employment, and specifically jobs and income inequality are key social determinants of health. And the People of Color Health Equity Collaborative is also in support of this as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well, co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Hank Keaton, and I come from Scotts Mills, and I'm shocked that this bill has been watered down by Wall Street banks through the mouthpiece of the Oregon Bankers Association. I'm a small business owner for 35 years here in the state, and I can tell you that I came down here to support a state bank because as a business person, I could make money with a state bank. You bring the $30 billion that we Oregon taxpayers own and have in short and long-term investments, as revealed by the Comprehensive Accounting Financial Report, bring it here in Oregon. The members of this committee and I could hire better brains than Goldman Sachs has, better brains than Citibank, better brains than the too-big-to-fail banks that have tanked the world economy. We could do it ourselves. That's what they're so afraid of. They don't want that $30 billion to come here. They want to milk it. You get our $30 billion here, we manage it. Any one of you could hire the brains to do it, an intelligent job using standard banking procedures, not the idiotic procedures that the too-big-to-fail banks use, credit default swaps and all the rest of that toxic asset stuff. So I came down here today to support a state bank, and with all due respect to Representative Barnhart, it's been watered down to be nothing but a wet towel. I would support it if that's all you guys can do, but I believe you guys can do better. We need a state bank. Bring our $30 billion back to the state. I'll show you how to do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. We could encourage you not to show demonstration because that could get into elongating the hearing significantly. Feel free to applaud for anything members of the committee say, but. Now, they got away. Did any of you have any questions for that panel? They got away maybe anticipating. Okay, I'm not seeing any. You're safe. So up right now, Peter, Saba, and Bobby, and on deck, Janice, Rose, Alan, I think it's also Rose, and John from Benton County. I can't quite read your last name. Booker, that's a K. Thank you. Welcome. Any of the three of you may proceed. Let's begin with Peter.
Okay. Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Peter Burgell. I'm the director of Oregon Peaceworks, a statewide peace and justice and environmental advocacy organization. And I'm not a financial guy. I don't know a whole lot about these things, but I do have a couple of quick comments for you today, and they are along the lines of the last couple of folks who spoke. We have great concerns about money draining out of this state to go to the military. We came to the legislature last time and said, what can we do about this? And we were told not much. We have concerns about money going out of Oregon to the too-big-to-fail banks in the form of the bailouts. Can't do much about that at this point. And we have concerns about the money draining out of Oregon into the profits of those too-big-to-fail banks that are continuing to go on. And we do think you can do something about that, as the last gentleman said. I'm surprised to see that the bill has been watered down to the extent that it has been, but I still support it because I'm going along with the folks here who are smarter than I am about stuff like this and say at least this is a step in the right direction. But I do encourage you to keep the idea of a state bank, a real state bank like North Dakota, on the table. Of course the big banks don't like it. They're going to lose profits if we have something like that, but we need those profits here in Oregon. We really do. We really do. We need to keep them here. In terms of the Dash 3 amendments, the original bill had two sections, 5 and 6, which refer to bringing some of that money home. And those sections are gone. I noticed I didn't get much chance to look at this, and I'm not an expert on this kind of thing. But I'm concerned about the loss of the of sections 5 and 6 where it talks about the money coming back into or staying here in Oregon. So those are my comments. I encourage you to pass the bill. Currently with 5 and 6 still in it, sections 5 and 6 still in it, but I also, as the previous folks did, encourage you to keep the idea of a state bank on the table.
Thank you. Saba.
Chair Hunt and members of the committee, my name is Saba Ahmed, and I'm representing Oregon League of Minority Voters and also the Oregon Muslim Citizens Alliance. And I'm testifying here to urge you guys to support.
Can you speak up a little louder, Saba?
Oh, sure. I'm testifying here to urge you guys to support the bill. We wanted the State Bank of Oregon specifically, and I think this is a good move in that direction. Specific amendments to the, I haven't seen the Dash 3 amendments, but generally we wanted to show our support and encourage you guys to support it. Thanks.
Thank you. Bobby, welcome.
Mr. Co-Chairs and Commission members, I am a business owner and entrepreneur and a founding member of a startup hedge fund.
Can you identify yourself for the record? Thanks.
Bobby Schultz. I'm a founding member for a startup hedge fund. I don't think you've heard any testimony from an investor. In my opinion, the current system is really broken. So you guys are moving in the right direction. I would encourage both of you to work in a bipartisan direction in that regard. But I'm not in favor of 3450. As an investor, you're always analyzing risk. Where is the risk to the deal? You like stability, stability in the financial markets, stability in the labor markets. And much of the techno talk has legitimately focused on assessing that risk. And so I congratulate both the whole committee for that. I would ask your committee to conduct, though, a formal risk analysis of HS 3450 versus 2972. And I speculate that what you'll find is that based on 2972, which is based on a 93-year proven business model, that there'll be less risk associated with a bill that more closely resembles the North Dakota business model than one where you have to blaze a new trail and have to set new assumptions for risk, set new assumptions for assessing that risk, versus one where you already have a 93-year track record where you can assess that risk. And that's all.
Any questions for these panelists? Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Next up, Janice Allen and John
Booker,
yes.
I'm on your mailing list, by the way.
So. That's the beauty of the committee administrator suggested we might take names by electronically. Are Janice Rose or Allen Rose? Not to testify. Okay, then I'd invite up David Bean with this panel, and that's actually the last person I've got signed up to testify. Mr. Booker, welcome.
Yes, I'm from the great
County of Benton County. I'm also an Oregon taxpayer. And I'm also a person that's been affected by this. I can share my personal story here. I have been affected by this Oregon economy. I have been, when I came to Oregon, and I've been an Oregonian for 40 years now, I came here with a thing hoping that I would have a full-time job, I would have be able to have a roof over my head, I would not be on public assistance, and I have found that now with this whole situation, we are in a dire straits, and I'm speaking about the budget here because I know Senator Hunt and, or excuse me, Representative Hunt and Representative Olson, you are going to have to make some tough decisions on cutbacks in this state. What I want to see, and I support this Oregon State Bank because as a taxpayer, what's a greater risk? If I want to make an investment here, I would rather make it in the state of Oregon here where I know I can watch the development for my grandchildren in this state growing. What's happening, I'm seeing, we've already got the Wall Street banks. We found we don't want to go down that road. I'm for the situation here with jobs. I would like to have a full-time job. I've been downsized. I've been cut back at my job. Part of it's the Oregon economy. Part of it is we're not investing in our own people in our own state here. That's why I support the Oregon State Bank, because I feel there's a future on the horizon. Whatever Senator Barnhart or any amendments or anything that comes down the line, I'm looking at the Oregon future. I'm a taxpayer. I want to see my investment. What's a better risk? Investing in out-of-state banks where I know that I'm going to end up not seeing the results of helping my family and my children here investing in this state, or investing in a sure bet in Oregon here? That's why I support the Oregon State bill. I'm also on assistance, and I would like to get off that assistance and be able to be a working taxpayer here and support this great state. I think with a quarter unemployment out there and what's happening in the great state, I think we can do a better job. And I ask you and encourage you to support this bill, not only for my sake, but for every Oregonian out there. Thank you.
Thank you. David, welcome.
Thank you for this opportunity to testify. Co-Chair Olson and Co-Chair Hunt and members. I wrote a thesis.
You can identify yourself. For the record,
I please. Am David Bean from Portland. I've written a thesis in 1978 on the monetary system. I attended the American Monetary Institute's annual conference in Chicago in 2008 when everything was hitting the fan. I look at this from the big picture. I'd just like to throw in some data that you may not be aware of. For example, the size of what the bankers have described as the subprime loan market, also described as the balloon loan market, was $1.3 trillion. This is according to Paul Volcker. The size of the CDS market was $60 trillion. That's what froze the credit. What's a CDS or credit default swap? It is a bet that a loan will default. That's why so many of our houses are in foreclosure. That's why so many businesses cannot get loans, because their capital, which is their house, every small business puts up their house, that is falling. And for the latest data for the Portland area is that house prices fell by 1.8% this last month. If that continues for a year, that's over a fifth of the value of people's capital. So keeping the money here is important. You heard the testimony of farmers. They need to be able to, this is husbanding the land. This is our collective responsibility. One more final detail and I'll quit. I have a friend who is the on the board of Cal Coastal, which is an agricultural bank down in, that covers Salinas in the Pajaro Valley in California. They ship a lot of lettuce. They're in the same situation as our small banks here. They would not get They could not get additional capital from any of the money center banks. And so they're having to go to the Rubo Bank in Denmark to get money for crops, and they're still only lending 25% of what their previous volume was. So it's a function that needs to be done,
okay. And
it's not being done in the commercial world. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for our witnesses? Thank you both. That completes the folks who signed up. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3452 who did not sign up? Outstanding. Thank you all for your succinct and very constructive testimony. We appreciate it. We will, and I would say if you've got additional comments as you read and absorb the Dash 3s, definitely follow up with Representative Barnhart or with any of us. I would appreciate your continued suggestion and feedback. We close the public hearing on House Bill 3452. Yeah, the committee will stand at ease and let folks clear out of the room for a moment.
Senator Shields had to wait on the floor. Do you want us to call Delser?
Barbara?
Come back to order. We've had an opportunity for folks on the previous bill to clear the room. The air is now coming back into the room as all the bodies have diminished. So we've got several work sessions before us. We're going to try and take them as people are arriving. First of all, I'd begin by opening a work session on House Bill 3074. I know Mac McDonald had not been able to testify before, so we'd invite you to come forward. Invite Mr. Sambridge to just remind us very briefly what House Bill 3074 is.
Mr. Chairman, this is the bill that has to do with electronic voting. It would establish electronic voting to allow residents who serve in the armed forces of the United States or Merchant Marine of the United States to cast ballots electronically.
And I also remind folks, this is the one where we have the Dash 2 amendments that were handed out, I think, at or before the prior hearing, which would bring this also into compliance with federal law by extending that same electronic voting privilege to any of those who meet the category of being Oregon citizens who are in the field, as it were. Mac, welcome. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, United Veterans of Oregon, which is basically every veterans organization in the state. We support House Bill 3074 in that it gives a wider coverage than we could get if we had facts or something else, because a man out on outpost, way out, can still be able to vote, even though he's not back where you have facilities. The normal facilities. And it looks like you've covered the part where fraud would almost be impossible to complete. So we're in support of the bill. Good bill. Hope it passes.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions?
Thanks, Mac. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you, sir.
Anyone else who wanted to comment on this bill who didn't get a chance at the public hearing on it? We are awaiting the fiscal. We have a fiscal on the main bill. This is one of the cases where we're awaiting the final fiscal on the dash two amendments. Is that correct?
We're waiting for on the dash three. We have the dash two.
Well, I think we're going to... I'm
sorry. Mr. Chair, I don't think we need to wait any longer for the dash threes. It's just okay. Now if we could just move this to Monday.
So we're gonna carry over House Bill 3074 to our Monday agenda, and we'll have all the paperwork and be focused on the main bill with the addition of the dash twos at that point. So I'd close the work session on House Bill 3074, and I think we'll move to open a work session on House Bill 2998, just to change things up a little bit, Mr. Sambridge. Open a work session on House Bill 2998, if you would remind us what that is.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2998, with the dash two amendment, it deletes the requirement that the Commission develop a combined application form to include voter registration, which was part of the original bill. It retains a requirement that the Commission employees offer voter registration cards to applicants for licenses, tags, and permits. You have the dash two amendment, and we have a fiscal statement and a revenue statement on those. The fiscal statement for the dash two is minimal.
So just to clarify, Mr. Sambridge, as I understand, with this bill with the dash twos would make this requirement of the offices of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife, but not of the retail locations. Is that
yes,
correct?
This deletes the requirement that was in the original bill that agents of the commission offer the voter registration along with commission licenses, tags, and permits, but it does retain the requirement that the commission employees offer those voter registration cards.
Okay.
Do you want to ask Kurt to come up and say anything at all?
Kurt, we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to come forward.
Rule 8 of the Code of the West.
Kurt, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. Chair Hunt, Chair Olson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I was here today simply to ask answer any questions that you all may have with regard to this bill and the Dash 2 amendments. We did work with the bill's sponsors on those amendments in the language. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, I guess it may be evident, but I have to ask anyway, does the commission employ any persons that work in private retail establishments?
Chair Hunt, Chair Olson, Representative Coach Vice Chair Holvey, no, the commission employees are all at state offices. All the private facilities have private employees, private sector employees.
Thank you.
Any further questions for our witness? Thanks, Kurt.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2998.
Co-Chair Olson moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2998. Are there any discussion? Any objection on the dash two amendments? Hearing none, the motion is carried. Co-Chair Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move then House Bill 2998 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Co-Chair Olson moves House Bill 2998 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Amy, would you please call the roll?
Representative
Winger?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Berger?
Aye.
Representative
Freeman?
Aye.
Representative
Colby? Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye. Motion carries, and I guess we'll talk with... Do we want to talk with the two sponsors of the bill?
Absolutely. I think your two retired cops need to do that, yeah.
I don't know. Retired cops carrying bills on the floor worries me, but we'll talk with the two sponsors of the bill and follow up with Mr. Chambers around that. Close the work session on House Bill 2998, and I think we will open a public hearing and work session on HCR 2. Invite Representative Gelser to come forward. If you've got anyone you want to bring with you.
Mr. Chairman, HCR 2 designates April 2011 as Financial Literacy Month.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hunt, Co-Chair Olson, members of the committee. Thanks for having me here today. It's my first time to visit the Rules Committee. I miss you all, though you all look much different than you did last session, and congratulations, Representative Berger, on representing the team. HCR 2, I bring to you today on behalf of my constituent, Brian Sims, who has spent some time in front of the Education Committee in the interim and last session. Brian is a constituent of mine who started a business out of his garage that became one of the fastest growing businesses in Oregon. And what they focus on is providing tools to young people to increase their financial literacy skills. They partner with credit unions, and they are now working with multiple states to provide free curriculum to high school students to be able to improve their financial literacy skills. Laura Edmondson from Brass Media is here today to talk with you a little bit about the resolution. It may be somewhat familiar to my friend and co-chair, Representative Wingard. We had a similar conversation earlier today in a different resolution. And I turn it over to Ms. Edmondson.
Thank you, Representative Gelser. Co-Chair Hunt, Co-Chair Olson, and members of the committee, my name is Laura Edmondson, and I represent Brass Media and the Brass Student Program, and I'm here today to speak in support of HCR 2 and the designation of April as Financial Literacy Month. My title at Brass is the Director of Education for the Brass Student Program, and my role is to help carry out Brass's mission of helping young adults understand money. The company was started by then 19-year-old college student Brian Sims, who through his product Brass Magazine was able to find a way to teach his peers about money in a way that was relevant and engaging. And as Representative Gelser said, today we provide curriculum and materials for free to all high schools in the state of Oregon. Our mission again is to provide these tools, and we teach the importance of using money management to live a successful and productive life. As we all know, money impacts everyone, and we've heard negative statistics regarding declining savings rate, increasing credit card debt, and out-of-control spending. And these numbers serve as a grim reminder that financial literacy is crucial to our collective economic health. At Brass, one of the things that I do frequently is I visit classrooms and I talk to students, not only teaching them skills such as budgeting and how to avoid credit card debt, but I also listen to them and I listen to the things that they're concerned about. We rarely ever get a question from students asking us how to get rich. It's not about that. It's about living money as it impacts their everyday life. They want to know about how they're going to pay off that student loan debt, how they're going to avoid credit card debt, how they're going to save money to pay for all those firsts in life, like a first car, first home, health insurance, things like that. These are the things that are important to them, and they should be vitally important to all of us. So what is the oldest question in the education book? It's, when am I ever going to use this? And the answer is right now. To help young adults understand money is to hand them a survival kit for life. This is our mission at Brass. But as Secretary Geithner recently said, all of us, parents, educators, policymakers, and students, share the responsibility to ensure that young people in our country learn a set of practical skills that will help them navigate important personal financial decisions. And the passage of HCR 2 and the acknowledgement of the importance of financial literacy is a large step to achieving this goal. On behalf of Brass and our credit union partners, First Tech Credit Union and Oregon Community Credit Union, I encourage you to join many other states in designating April as Financial Literacy Month. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions for our two witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, may I inquire, do we have other witnesses?
We have two more on this topic.
Thank you. I'll wait.
Okay. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Representative Buckley, how's your time? Do you want us to exit out of this one and come back to it?
I am at your
okay. Shouldn't be too long. Our next two witnesses will be very aware that you're here. Pam Levitt and Kevin Christensen. symbolically coming from the two opposite sides of the room to the common ground of this witness table. Welcome to the rules.
I insist.
Chris,
so I can correct you.
Welcome to the Rules Committee.
Co-Chair Hunt, Co-Chair Olson, Kevin Christensen, Oregon Bankers Association. It's a pleasure to be before you. We are here in support of HCR 2. I will be extraordinarily brief. I think elevating this particular issue up is always important, and a lot of some of the troubles that we've run into in the last few years stem from a lack of financial literacy. And so I think elevating this education with our young people is absolutely crucial. I know that our association has worked with other educational groups in the past, as well as our banks, to try to expand educational awareness in terms of financial literacy. So we would definitely support moving forward with this and teaching responsible money management. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. Pam, welcome.
Co-Chair Hunt, Co-Chair Olson, members of the committee, Pam Levitt with the Northwest Credit Union Association. I will also be very brief. This is my 17th year in the building, and I have been working on financial literacy, financial education every single session. We have introduced bills, resolutions, task force concepts, anything to promote the concept of financial literacy. Our credit unions and other lenders are out there in our schools working hard to educate our students. I read an Oregonian survey of high school students in the state, and they said they listed personal finance as one of the top skills they still needed in high school but were not getting. And certainly there is a debate about what should be taught in the classroom, and certainly we support all the essential skills that are there, but we support the recommendation of a task force that came out in 2009 that said financial literacy should be added as one of the essential skills. Obviously, we work very closely with Brass Media. In fact, Brian Sims and I were on an airplane to D.C. where he spoke at a credit union conference, and support all the efforts. We certainly support this HCR2. We thank Representative Gelser for her leadership. I also want to acknowledge Representative Wisnett and his leadership in another committee on financial literacy. And thank you for your time.
Great. Questions for our witnesses? Thank you both for being here. We appreciate it. Anyone else want to testify on this bill? Seeing none, do we have we are in a work session. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Co-Chair Olson.
I would move that HCR 2 to the floor with a due dot.
Co-Chair Olson moves that we approve HCR 2 and send it to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Wingard.
I would just say, Mr. Chair, that I'm sure it is entirely unintended, but we passed some financial literacy resolutions out of our education committee today, and if we do this, they may actually travel simultaneously and hit the floor on the very same day, which, you know, I just want to point out when the legislature accidentally does something coordinated. So,
all in the master plan. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I simply want to note that there are a number of banks and credit unions that work hard to help with financial literacy. We need to deal with it with more significance and importance in our schools, and I'm a strong supporter of the resolution.
Amy, to call the roll.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Aye.
Representative Garrett.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Wingard.
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson.
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt.
Aye. Motion carries, and we'd ask Representative Gelser if she would carry this on the floor. Thank you. We'd close the public hearing and work session on HCR 2 and open a public hearing and work session on HCR 20. Invite Representative Buckley to come forward and Mr. Sembridge to brief us.
Mr. Chairman, HCR 20 is in memoriam William Patton, 1927-2011.
Welcome to the Rules Committee.
Thank you.
Where you don't have to talk about anything related to the budget.
And I shan't. Not even financial literacy. Thank you, Co-Chair Hunt, Co-Chair Olson, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley. I represent Ashland in South Jackson County in the legislature. I appreciate your time and consideration of House Concurrent Resolution 20. This resolution honors... I'm going to get emotional here. Bill Patton. The sweetest man, I think, that you could ever meet. I got to tell you a story about Bill Patton. When I was going to University of Santa Clara, my wife and I, you know, we met at Santa Clara, and our junior and senior years, we saved up enough money to go to the Ashland, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. It was like, it was Mecca for us. It was like, we're theater majors, we're doing our stuff. And the two heroes that we had were Agnes Boehmer, who was the visionary behind the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and Bill Patton, who was the genius, the nuts and bolts, that he was the gaffer's tape for that held the Oregon Shakespeare Festival together and made the thing work. And the guy was legendary. He just legendary in theater circles. Richard Hay, the great scenic designer they have, was like the third part of that triangle that made this incredible organization work. And so we always thought of, like, you know, these guys as being like these giants, these incredible giants, and they were in the theater world. They just did amazing things. And many years later, Bill Patton was the man who hired my wife to work at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And I was so intimidated to meet him the first time I met him, because, like I say, this guy's the giant. He's like one of the big giants of theater in America, as far as I'm concerned. And when I meet him, he is the kindest, the most self-effacing, the gentlest, the most unassuming person. If you met him in the supermarket, you would have absolutely no idea that this guy accomplished something that no other theater administrator that I know of in America has accomplished, building a theater organization from virtually nothing. In fact, the first summer he was in Ashland, he actually they did a production in Lithia Park, and then he sold fireworks afterwards in order to make money to live on. That's how he survived. He sold fireworks for the 4th of July event. That's how he survived. He helped Agnes Boehmer build the organization from virtually nothing, no paid employees, a ramshackle stage that they performed on, into the organization that won a Tony Award that's world famous. I just can't emphasize enough, just one of the sweetest, kindest people you've ever met in your life. When he passed away in January, the Medford Mail Tribune had a whole, you know, front page section, and then in the living section they had another section, and just the outpouring of stories and affection for this man was just remarkable. So his wife Shirley Patton, I called Shirley and asked if that would be okay for me to do a resolution in Bill's honor, and their kids jumped into this and helped do the text for the resolution, and they will come up whatever day we schedule this for. If this resolution should meet your approval, whatever day we schedule this for on the floor, they will come up for the event. And again, thank you for your time and consideration. I can't repeat often enough just how amazed I am at the brilliance of the man, the humanity of him, the kindness, and an Oregon treasure. Thanks, Co-Chair.
Thank you, Representative Buckley. Question, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, just a question for the Administrator. Do we have a fiscal impact statement on this bill?
Been there, done that.
Not fair. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will note that I read through the resolution and was curious as to how it was that Mr. Patton made his living. I will say that the story you tell, Representative Buckley, is far more interesting than any of the imagination I had.
He was a kid from Stanford, Representative Barnhart, just a kid from Stanford who came up to work for a summer and stayed there for the rest of his life.
Great. Thank you very much, Representative Buckley. And in terms of the date, I'm sure it can be carried over to whatever date works for the family. So you find out what date works for them, and as long as it's a weekday,
absolutely,
the bill can be carried over to then.
Thanks.
Assuming we pass it out. Do we have a motion? We're in a work session. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move
HCR 20 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Berger
or
moves
do adopt, or is it
HCR 20 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Discussion. Seeing none, Amy, please call the roll.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Yes.
Representative Garrett.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Winger.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye. And the motion carries, and we'd ask Representative Buckley to carry it on the floor, and seriously, do let us know when that's most convenient for them, and we can just carry it over. Thank you very much. We'd close the public hearing and work session on HCR 20, and open a public hearing and work session on SCR 10 and invite Senator Atkinson and Representative McLean to come forward and ask Mr. Stembridge to brief us on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, SCR 10 honors the residents of Plush, Oregon, great case of Ashland Fire and Rescue, and the Oregon Ambulance Association for their efforts in obtaining a vitally needed ambulance for the community of Plush.
Welcome to the Rules Committee.
Thank you very much. For the record, Jason Atkinson. I represent a good portion of Southern Oregon, and I'm very pleased to bring this to you. There's actually a very big tie-in to the representative who spoke before, and just because Oregon is small, I just listened to your testimony and went to high school with the person who was last memorialized's daughter. And so we're, if you live in Ashland long enough, you're an alumni, and I always scare my Democratic friends by telling them I, too, worked at the Shakespearean Festival for quite a while. In fact, I used to trade rides to the mountain by being hidden in the coat closet of the Angus Bomer Theater writing poetry homework for my friends who had the car, but that's another story. This is a very important bill, and I'm delighted to bring it to you. I won't tell you the entire story other than to say that this story is rare, and the story of this memorial is something that is very unique to our state. This is a story of a very horrible tragedy being turned into something very wonderful. And my involvement with this community goes back actually from high school and being involved in Lake County, friends in Lake County, through a few careers where I used to train in Lake County because it was high altitude and very windy. And knew a whole bunch of families there just out of love for that place. Years later, after graduate school, my dog was invited hunting in the Warner Valley, and I could come as long as I drove the dog. And I became the kid of this club, and my dog would retrieve, and I would keep my mouth shut and keep getting invited because I learned if you can cook or you have a dog, you can get invited even if they don't like you. Well, years go by, and I continue to go, and I become friends with a gentleman by the name of Leon Flick, and Leon is one of a kind left in Oregon. He's a day rider, if you know what a day rider is. He is a professional cowboy who rides for about 9 or 10 big family ranches, and they hire him at a day rate to do everything, one of the last remaining full-time cowboys. And he's also a very well-known in the world of cowboy poetry in Elko, cowboy poet. Well, years had gone by, and the little community, we were facing budget cuts by the time I was elected, and they were going to, a colleague of mine who's no longer serving, stood on the Senate floor and said that the funding for the school bus in Plush, Oregon, was a typo. Obviously, there's no place called Plush, and at the time, there, you know, it's a community of roughly 40 people. The valley only has 120, and I had adopted it as my second home, and I, in no uncertain terms, made the correction, and the little bus was saved, and not because of me, but the fun thing about this bus is it's a little bus that takes school children from Plush 15 miles down the road to Adel, to the middle school, and one school bus serves both schools. It's a very tight-knit group. I'll skip quite a few portions of the rest of the story. There was a tragedy that befell the little community when Connie Frank was on her way with her three stair-step sons, and was in a car accident on the cutoff road to Lakeview. They're about 60 miles northeast of Lakeview. And because ambulance services couldn't get to her, she had died while the three boys were trapped still alive inside. And as you can imagine, this shook the entire community to its core. And my friend Leon said, well, it'll never happen again. So they held a town meeting at the restaurant, gas station, shopping center, bar, community hall that's all in the same room, and decided that this would never happen again. And so Leon said, well, I'm going to get my EMT, and who's going to join me? And without too much detail, 6 out of 40 said, we'll do it. And we'll call that kid with the dog, which I'm known as out there. We'll call that kid with the dog that did something with the something with the school bus to get us an ambulance. And I said, okay. So they called me, and Leon said, we need an ambulance. And I said, okay. Well, not that I'm an ambulance broker, But I said, all right, you have to do three things. Number one, you have to finish your EMT, because no one's going to grant or gift any money unless it's completed. Number two, you have to set up a nonprofit in the state of Oregon. And number three, you have to have everybody in this community contribute, and every dog. Because if those of you that have gone for grants, whether it be a big one or a small one, 100% board participation or 100% participation of those wanting the grant is key. It doesn't matter the amount, it's the sacrifice. So about every 90 days, I'd call Leon, every a month and a half or so, 60 days, not a ways and means guy. I would say, how's it going? He said, well, I'm getting a little closer. And it's a huge commitment when you live 60 miles from northeast Oregon, 60 miles from Lakeview, to come into town or come into Klamath or go into Bend to get your training. But on last May, he called me on a Monday. He said, Jason, they finally learned my name wasn't the kid with the dog. Leon said, I passed my test on Friday. We saved our first life on Highway 140 on Saturday. Today's Monday. Where's my ambulance? And there were six who finished their EMT. They got a nonprofit, and they had raised $11,500. And what happened next is a really wonderful story. It's where my good friends seated behind me, Stan Heim, came involved with this organization called the Oregon Ambulance Association. I called Oregon Surplus. And we were on the hunt for an ambulance. And Oregon Surplus had one for me, a 1986 model that was no longer certified with no transmission. And I told them, please don't sell that. That's my backup. And so we went all over. We went to New Jersey. We went to Independence, Oregon, and every state in between looking for a surplus that we could afford. And as you know, an ambulance costs $250,000 to get going. Well, I had taken a project. I was on the other side of the planet, literally, last summer in August, when I had told this story so many times that people were tired of listening to me, when I got an email to be at the Ashland City Council on the following Tuesday to tell the story about the ambulance. I flew 44 hours home. It took almost two entire days of flying to come home. I showered and shaved what was left of me, and I told the story, and the City Council of Ashland, in their extremely big heart, donated their ambulance. And this is where it gets really good, because the Oregon Ambulance Association all paired in together, from little ambulance organizations, big and small, but mainly small, from all over Oregon, started to chip in because they'd all heard about it. So now this ambulance is outfitted with gurneys and oxygen and bandages and all this. A local friend of mine in Southern Oregon donated the decals to put on it, which are fantastic, in the memory of the two ladies with the brand new nonprofits named on the side. The ambulance got detailed. The city of Ashland put brand new tires on it. Someone donated an acre of ground, and someone donated the lumber to build a firehouse or a first responders place for it. The city of Lakeview got involved and started to coordinate raffles and building an entire community event around this whole thing. And then it came time for the day for us to deliver this fantastic ambulance. And I called a friend of mine, Father Anthony, of St. Patrick's in Lakeview. And I said, Father, as the head of this area, as the spiritual head of the Warner Valley, would you please come bless it? And I told them I didn't want anything. I am a small piece in this. The only thing I want was my 7-year-old to lead Pledge of Allegiance at the dedication of the ambulance. So I took my son out of school, and he was very nervous, but I made him do it, because if your dad's in politics, by God, you're going to speak and just like dad. And so I said, the only thing I want you to say differently is, gentlemen, remove your hats. So my little son went up there in front of a whole bunch of cowboys and said, gentlemen, remove your hats. The Pledge of Allegiance, ready, begin, just like he does in elementary school. And there wasn't a dry eye. Leon Flick is now the man of the year in Lake County, and it all started because somebody got together in the community of Oregon and put this whole thing together. And I'm sorry for taking so long, but it's such a rare treat. Government was not involved. There was no program. This was neighbors helping neighbors, from Astoria to Estacada to anywhere else Nan would say, all the way to Plush, Oregon. And they are very proud, and they have saved three lives as of this date.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's great. Thank you, Senator. Representative McLean, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mike McLean. I represent House District 55, which is all of Lake County, including Plush and Lakeview. When I was campaigning, Senator Atkinson called me one day and said, we're going to get an ambulance for Plush. And he said, because you're going to win, and then you're going to, so you might as well get involved. So it is an amazing story. The only thing I would have to say is I had the distinct privilege to be a co-sponsor of Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 10. So I didn't draft it. Had I drafted it, it would have one more whereas, and that is, I've been asked by the good people of my district to publicly acknowledge what Senator Atkinson has done. And there is nothing in here about what the senator did. But the truth is that he did a lot. And he spearheaded a lot of the effort to get that ambulance. And they absolutely adore him. And whenever I go anywhere in Lake County, to any political event, I introduce myself as the friend of Senator Jason Atkinson, and that dispels 90% of the animosity towards government. At any rate, I would answer any questions that you have, but I appreciate your time and ask for the passage of SCR 10.
Any questions for our witnesses? Representative, seeing none, thank you both very much. Nan or Representative Buckley, anyone else would like to testify on this? Okay. Anyone else? We are open for a motion. We're in work session. Coach Olson.
Mr. Chair, I move SCR 10 to the House floor with a due adopt.
Coach Olson moves SCR 10 to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Any discussion? Amy, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Yes.
Representative
Merritt.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Winger.
Aye.
Coach Olson.
Aye.
Coach Hunt.
Aye. Motion carries, and we'd ask Representative McLean if you're willing to carry this on the House floor.
Yes, Mr.
That'd be great. You're one for one so far, so don't screw it up, okay? Close the public hearing work session on SCR 10 and open a work session on House Bill 2880. This is our last bill of the day. Invite Representative Smith to come and address the Dash 1 amendments and Mr. Stenberg to bring us up to speed.
Mr. Chairman, you heard this on the 11th of February. This is House Bill 2880 with the Dash 1 amendment that replaces the measure. It creates a 10-member National Voter Registration Act State Compliance Council consisting of representatives of the governor, county clerks, Secretary of State, five designated voter registration agencies. It directs the council to assess federal guidelines, identifying barriers, and ensuring the compliance with the National Voter Registration Act of 1993. And it directs the governor's office and the Secretary of State to staff the council, declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Representative Smith, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jefferson Smith, representing District 47 in the Oregon House. Want to get you here out of here on time. Have talked to many of you about it. This is not the one of the sort of controversial bills that caused very exciting conversation in this room, but was sort of the simpler one. Thanks to Representative Olson, who had a thought of helped lead to the Dash 1 amendments and working with the Secretary of State's office, and help, and thanks to them as well, rather than have an instant imposition of some unclear requirements, instead just to have reporting plus a council to evaluate the best way to make sure we're in compliance with federal law going forward. I can talk more about that if people want, but hopefully it'll help us avoid a lawsuit and get us ahead of the curve, and I can answer questions if people want it.
Questions? Representative Freeman.
Briefly. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Good representative, if we go ahead and pass this bill, will you quit bothering me about it?
Oh, my God.
As soon as it's signed by the governor, I won't bother you again until next session.
Thank you.
About this bill.
About this bill. Did you hear the last
one? Chair?
Representative Byrd.
I thought I was the only one that he was visiting on, and I thought it was because It was me. No?
So
okay.
I want to know why I haven't been bothered about this bill.
Yeah. You clearly have your two favorites. Okay. We've established that.
Mr. Chair, I will defer most of my conduct at the advice of the good co-chair, Representative Andy Olson.
Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, my recollection from the testimony in this bill is that it was an attempt to make certain that we complied with the National Water Registration Act issues, and that
right.
the other states are getting sued because they don't do it. How does setting up a commission keep us from getting sued?
I'll help with that, Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart.
He hasn't been bugging me either. So.
Yeah, a challenge. If you guys want to see my vote count, I'm happy to share. The challenge that is faced is that this is a problem that is not owned by any particular agency. Right, that's a particular problem. So, you know, to as I think I said before, to quote the Secretary of State, the problem I have, Jeff, you know, speaking for the Secretary of State, the problem I have is I'm the most likely one to get sued, and I don't run the state agencies. So, a couple different ways you can structure it, but part of this is having in my own view, is that we need the legislature and the executive branch and Secretary of State's office, as well as, you know, help with the county clerks, et cetera, if we're going to get to the bottom of it. And getting them in a room and giving a little legislative nudge with a bill is maybe the kick in the pants that'll be helpful in moving us along. And maybe a little softer than saying, you know, darn it, just do it, and if you don't, we'll be angry, you know, and it gives a little tool and the Secretary of State a little authority.
Okay. Could I?
Representative Barnhart, please.
All right. So what this thing does, as I understand it, is it sets up a commission which lasts for about 9 months.
It's a council.
Maybe 8 months by the time the bill passes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Secretary of State issues a report every year. Is that the sum and substance of it?
That is the sum and substance of the bill. I think there will be discussion maybe on the Senate side to say, is that the exact right time frame? Should there be more than the 8 months, et cetera? I think those will be conversations ongoing. But ultimately, I think, you know, consider what's a good example? Well, consider sitting on a Ways and Means sub where we get an update on what's happening with a particular piece of state importance. And just having Secretary of State tell us what's going on and having the legislature be apprised of what's going on will hopefully keep us apprised. And if we need to take further action, we can. There will be, in terms of the timeline, I think, ongoing discussion. I know he's got to go.
Trying to give you my vote, but
I appreciate that, man, and I'm not trying to lose
it. Seeing no further questions, we are in work session.
I moved the dash on amendment.
Moves the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill 2880. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended.
Representative Wingard moves House Bill 2880 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Call me first.
Is there any fiscal?
The fiscal?
Minimal. Minimal says.
Thank you.
Fiscal says minimal.
Thank you.
Amy, would you call the roll with Representative Wingard first?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Burr.
Aye.
Representative Freeman.
Yes.
Representative Garrett.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson.
See.
Co-Chair
Hunt. Aye.
Motion carries. Representative Smith, would you carry the bill on the floor?
I will. Ride the brand.
All right. Close the work session on House Bill 2880. Okay. Seeing nothing else for the good of the order, we're adjourned 1 minute early.